Hello, all you out there in Radio Land. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, we hope you stay glued to kptz.org. Our website is more than just a way to listen to today's shows. For example, you can find the biographies of all of our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town, and you can sample some of the earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as podcasts. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are those three young military guys grabbing lunch at Farms Reach in Chimicum? Sure, they probably came over from Indian Island for some yummy lunch, but what do they actually do over there? And who are the Zumba ladies working out at the community center in Port Townsend? They have too much energy for any morning. Then there's the guy in the business suit hurrying into the courthouse. Is he a lawyer or perhaps a judge? This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with people who make up the eclectic mix around these parts. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otters, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Lawrence Johnson, the owner of Carl's Building Supply. We all know Carl's Building Supply, or think we do, but what's generally not known is that the Johnson family history is intertwined with the history of this region. The Johnsons were one of the founding families of the Olympic Peninsula. So welcome to the show, Lawrence.
Thank you, Marianne.
Let's start at the beginning. Were you born and raised on the Olympic Peninsula?
Yeah, I was born in St. John's Hospital, which is right here in Port Townsend, the current Jefferson Hospital. Mm-hmm. And I was born in 1959 and lived here till I was 12, moved away for about 20 years and came back in 1992. So I've been here for the last 25 years.
Where did you move to when you left?
Moved to Edmonds.
Okay, to Edmonds. And is that where you went to high school?
Went to junior high and high school and college in Edmonds. Met my wife and had three kids and spent about 10 years trying to get back here.
Well, I always like to ask about high school because one of the things high school kids do to each other is they label each other. They say, he's a jock, she's a nerd. The person might not see themselves that way, but somehow they're aware that that's what their peers are thinking about them. So think back, what do you think they labeled you?
I was very small and tiny little guy. I think in eighth grade, I weighed 75 pounds. So
I see.
I joined the wrestling team. For me, it was kind of natural to get into a sport that I could be in a weight class and be with other 75-pound kids and boys and wrestle it against. So probably two labels, a little bit of the wrestling club, but also kind of one of the smart kids.
One of the smart kids, okay.
Kind of both.
So were you one of these kids who was pretty focused, who sort of knew what they wanted to do with their lives?
I was pretty focused, at least for a junior higher and then high school, that my life then was doing well in school and doing well in band and doing well in wrestling and yeah, I was pretty focused. I guess growing up on Merrillstone, you just worked a lot. You worked around the house, around the yard, and that was just kind of our ethic is we were just workers because my dad was a worker, my mom was a worker, my uncles, and everybody. So that's just what was play. That was considered
fun. What you did.
Fun.
So when you graduated, what field did you originally go into?
I majored in business administration and economics with emphasis in accounting and management. Just after high school, though, I went down to a lumberyard in Ballard and I applied for a job. My older brother had a job there, so he left his job, so I went and applied for his warehouse job. And I got the job because they assumed I worked in a lumberyard because my dad owned one.
That was a logical assumption, but I just nodded.
I could certainly do the job. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So they hired you.
They did.
I guess
he didn't think I would make it because he had another applicant, so he hired both of us. And I remember I thought, I'm going to do all I can to make sure I would outlast the other guy. I was kind of competitive, and I did outlast him.
And what was your strategy? Work longer, work harder? What did you put into it?
Run between customers, work as hard as I could, and try to outshine the other guy.
I would assume, like most places, you sort of started at the bottom.
The very bottom.
What is the very bottom in a situation like that?
The very bottom is $3 an hour, and you swept and cleaned and picked up sticks and swept under piles and stacked a lot of lumber. So we would put lumber that came in units that were laying down horizontally. You would unload them with a forklift, and we would stand those items up and carry them and stack them vertically in bins in this large warehouse. So lots of physical labor. Insulation trucks would come in. Nobody wanted to touch insulation because it was itchy. Mm-hmm. That's another job we would do, is unload these trucks of insulation by hand and store them up in the loft. Did a lot of deliveries for the drivers. So we would do lots of hand delivery, go out on job sites. So lots of physical labor.
So you worked your way up through the ranks a bit.
I worked part-time, of course, during school, but I worked out full-time in the summer. I would work out in the yard waiting on customers, building loads. I think year two, I was driving truck. Year three and four, I started coming into the sales counter. And then when I graduated from college, I started doing the contractor sales and all of the buying for the owner.
Meanwhile, across the water a little bit, Marrowstone, your father was still there, and he had Carl's. But the beginning of the story isn't really with your father, Carl. Carl's with a C was officially started by your father, but your family's history is more complex than that. So let's go back a little to the highlights of the Johnson family involvement. I think you told me when we talked before, it started with Carl with a K.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so tell me about Carl with a K.
So Carl with a K came from Norway in 1880, and he was in his 20s. And he came from a place called Fredrikstad, and he came to America. He eventually met and married Hannah Carlstrom, and they settled in Tacoma, and they quickly moved up to Port Ludlow, where Carl with a K was a boat builder. Mm. Carl's brother, Robert, came over with him. Carl with a K's first son was born, Harold Ludlow Johnson. That's my grandfather, mm-hmm. in Port Ludlow, and that was in 1889. Well, the next year, Carl and his brother, Robert, were rowing their boat from Port Ludlow up to Port Townsend, and while en route to Port Townsend, they looked in and saw Mystery Bay. So I think that little spot stuck in Carl's mind, because in 1892, Harold, Carl, Hannah, and their two sons settled back in Mystery Bay on Marrowstone Island, where they had their third child, my great aunt Ruth, who was born in their home in Nordland. So
they actually settled in Nordland in the 1890s,
correct,
right?
Yes.
Okay, got
yeah,
it.
About 1892. Mm-hmm. It's probably 5 years later is when the Puget Sound Defense started building up Fort Flagler. So that whole activity of building up the military fort at Fort Flagler,
a lot of construction work was
going on right around then. So a few more families were moving on to Marrowstone.
How many people would be on Marrowstone around that point in time?
Well, around 1899, there were about 10 families that were then living on Marrowstone Island.
Pretty private.
Yeah, pretty private. And about that time when they moved to Marrowstone, their father and mother, Johan and Louise, came over from Norway and joined Carl and his family and Robert and their family on Marrowstone Island. Mm-hmm. So their parents actually came over.
And so Carl with a K was in the boat building business.
Correct.
But he was also in construction or not?
I think everybody there was in construction because everybody had to build their own houses and they would tear down somebody's barn and use that lumber to build their own house. So yeah, I think everybody back then did some kind of building. Mm-hmm. A lot of those houses are still standing in Mystery Bay today. In fact, the Northern Store and the house above the store was my grandpa's house. Johan and Louise's were two doors down. Carl and Hannah's was next door, which became my Aunt Ruth's house. So all those home and early house sites are still standing right now.
Wow.
So they must have built something well, or knew something about construction.
Are they inhabited to this day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So we've got Carl and Robert in business, and his sons are growing up. So what did they do?
So what happens next in 1915, the Portage Canal, which was a land bridge, was dredged out. The federal government thought it was really important to have a waterway between Port Ludlow and Port Townsend, so that navigable waterway, that shipping, was more important than the 10 or so families that were living on Marrowstone. So for about 37 years, various ferries were built and used to transfer these cars back and forth from Hadlock to Indian Island, but it was a waterway there with no bridge. At the same time, because the fort was being constructed, they filled in the Indian Island to Marrowstone Causeway with a little bridge. So the land bridge was opened up to a waterway, and the waterway was filled in and made a land bridge. Hmm. when my grandfather, Harold, was about probably 30, he bought the store from his brother, which is the present Nordland store. And I think that was right around probably 1923 or so. And there's no dependable trucks back then because there's no bridges. So he actually bought a boat called the Prosper, and he would make twice a week trips down to Seattle. And each trip would take a couple of days, but he would go down and the first day would be spent delivering goods from Merrillstone. And the goods back then were turkeys, berries, and even clams and oysters. And they would take those materials and goods down to the waterfront where the present day Coleman Dock is, which is the ferry terminal, and all those piers along the waterfront. And then day two, he would go in through the locks and deliver into Ballard. And all the time he's delivering, he's also picking up turkey feed and other staples and building materials to bring back to his store in Mystery Bay. He called it the Nordland Trading Company.
Nordland Trading Company. Okay. And so the general principle was he took fresh produce down to Seattle and then he came back with building supplies and feed, grains, things like that.
Yeah.
So he sort of won on both ends.
Exactly.
He had sales on both ends.
Yeah.
Okay. What happened next?
That prospered. So he built another warehouse right next to the store. These stores and building were over in the waterside and his house is up behind it. Well, the boat Prosper proved to be too small. So he had a larger boat built in Ballard and he named it after himself, Harold J. And he did the same thing. He used that larger boat to take these trips down to Seattle. And oftentimes he would stop and pick up different There's a Native American population that lived across from present-day Fort Flagler State Park on the northeast end of Indian Island.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the Prince of Wales, the son of Chief Chetsamoka, lived there as well in this community.
Right.
So oftentimes, my grandpa Harold would take different family members of his who were sick over from this Indian community to a hospital in Port Townsend, or he might take them over to get groceries or drop off groceries on his trip from Seattle. But in appreciation, kind of a neat little trivia is that the Prince of Wales carved this beautiful canoe for my grandfather as a gift with the insignia of the tribe painted on both sides of this canoe. So that canoe is still in our family today.
But you're talking a miniature canoe, not one that's about three feet long. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's really lovely that's still in your family.
In 1933, my grandfather bought a local trucking company from two men on Merrillstone who had a license and the truck and started using trucks because by now the ferries were a little bit more reliable. And he sold the Harold J and he started trucking his poultry, strawberries, and turkeys down to Seattle and then was bringing back goods with his truck.
By truck. He evolved through boats into trucks.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, meanwhile, your father was growing up.
Yeah,
and,
so he's growing up when the war started in 1940s, 1941. So my dad joins the Navy. He's a diesel mechanic on LST ships, and he's in the Navy for 4 years, and he's in the Pacific Theater, Iwo Jima, and all those
wonderful places.
Yeah, wonderful places in the Pacific. And he came out of the Navy after he was discharged, and Grandpa Harold then turned the clamming business and the trucking business over to my dad. So my dad, Carl with a C, continues the trucking portion of the business, adds oysters to his seafood business. So he now is delivering clams and oysters into Seattle. And instead of bringing back materials for the store, he starts kind of tilting to building materials because a lot of local builders are now moving onto the island because the ferry service was more reliable. They're building homes and asking my dad, Carl, to bring back building materials, which he starts doing. And around 1947, that was really the beginning of Carl's building supply. And he would store building materials on different lots that the family owned.
Okay, so he was in trucking and he also was building a lumber company, basically.
Correct, yeah. So what really changed is in 1952, the bridge is built over Portage Canal. But once the bridge built, even more and more people started discovering Merrillstone and deciding to live there. So that just increased the need for materials.
So what year was the bridge built?
1952.
Okay. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM on your radio dial. The show's called Our Town, and I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town features some of the fascinating people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. Today, my guest is Lawrence Johnson, the owner of Carl's Building Supply. Lawrence comes from a long line of Norwegian Johnsons. The patriarch of the American part of the clan, Carl Johnson, that's Carl with a K, moved to Merrillstone around 1888. It was his grandson, Carl Johnson, Carl with a C, started Carl's Building Supply after he returned from fighting in World War II. My guest today is Carl's son, Lawrence. who took over Carl's Building Supply. You actually took over in the early 90s, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So what was the general state of the company when you took it over?
My dad was an entrepreneur. He was great at starting this clam and oyster business and had a trucking business. And he probably had a little bit more interest in those two businesses than he did in the lumber yard. But he was trying to manage these three businesses. So Carl's Building Supply was being managed by people he would hire who did a good job. And different family members were involved in running Carl's Building Supply. But at that time, there were a couple other lumber yards that had moved into the area, Port Townsend Lumber, which is a large lumber yard that served the contractor market in Port Townsend. And also Hadlock Building Supply was currently in Port Hadlock serving that market. So yeah, when I came to Carl's Building Supply, we had two strong competitors mm-hmm. in the market.
And you were a fairly young guy at that point.
I was young. I was 32.
32. Okay. Yeah. So you come into the business, you young whippersnapper taking over. I would imagine it was not free of friction.
No, it was a little overwhelming. I came from a successful yard in Seattle. Mm-hmm. We sold a strong contractor base. And yeah, when I came to Chimicum, it was a little bit of an awakening experience. It was a different market than I had anticipated. But I really wanted to raise my family on Marislin Island. That was really in the back of my mind. That was one of my goals, was to raise my three kids on Marislin.
How old were your kids when you came back?
1, 3, and 6.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you got them back here.
Yeah.
And then you had to start building the business, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So what were your early moves?
My early moves were, I had a lot of Japanese customers I was selling to when I was in Seattle. By then, the market was really increasing in Japan for 2x4 construction. And I partnered up with a mentor in Seattle who was selling millwork packages to Japan. And so he invited me to, along with these millwork of doors and window packages, to supply the commodity framing lumber to Japan. It was a real novel building experience for the Japanese in the late 80s and early 90s to build a 2x4 framing. It proved to be a product that they discovered after the Kobe earthquake that would withstand earthquakes, our style of framing. It was lighter, it's faster, you could insulate it better, it vented better, so there wasn't the rot issues, and it was just a real unique product for them. So we sold, I think my last year in Seattle, we sold 185 home packages into Japan.
Wow.
So those customers, not all of them, but quite a few of them, followed me up to Carl. So that was a real large change for Carl's Building Supply in 1992, 93, because immediately I changed a lot of the vendors because I had a real target market that I was trying to sell to, which is this high-end Japanese customer. So I brought that desire to sell a real high-end product to Japan into the market in Chimicum. And I quickly switched over to a different mill, a different specie, and a higher grade to really push this quality issue that my Japanese customer wanted and that I was accustomed to selling in Seattle. And I wanted to bring that into this local market of Port Townsend and the Olympic Peninsula. So that was an adjustment because a lot of the clients that they had attracted at that point might have been maybe more of a price-sensitive mm-hmm. customer. And the products I were carrying were probably among the most expensive. So even today, we really stress the overall value of the product, which does involve a higher costed product, but we feel there's a value there just in the quality. So we pushed that in every area, in plywood, in lumber, and in cedar.
Okay, so it was sort of a changeover from being the bottom of the market to the top end, really.
Correct.
You know,
yeah.
You went for the quality building supplies that must have been a change. It must have taken a few years to adjust.
It did, yeah, because you're kind of, you're changing vendors and some of the customers change because they're looking for a different product. So you're trying to find a different customer who wants that you're carrying, and you're looking for a different set of vendors. And really, sometimes it involves a different set of employees also who are looking for a different way to service the customer. So there are a lot of things that change. There's a lot of cultures that change at Carl's when I arrived, including the customers and the employees and the vendors.
So it must have been a tough couple of years getting it to where you wanted it to go.
Yeah, it was. It was a difficult 5 or 6 years.
And was there a certain point where you sort of saw that things were actually going your way?
Yeah, I would say probably 7 or 8 years into it, you could see that it definitely there's a shift. The collections got better. We had a lot of accounts that became insolvent during those early years. So there were some difficulties with cash flow, difficulties with profitability, but in time, it started to work. We were attracting customers who really wanted a high quality, high value product. Our market was increasing. I was selling a little bit back into Seattle, a little bit back up into Port Angeles and Squim, but a lot onto Bainbridge Island and Kitsap area, and of course, Marison and Port Townsend. So bit by bit, it was just a really slow progression of more and more profitability.
So what are some of your business philosophies that you think have contributed to your success?
Oh, gosh, I'm not a micromanager. I really truly believe in hiring quality and competent people. And then after you hire the people that really have that same philosophy you do, it's really easy to push those decisions down to them and let them take ownership over it. Because I am totally convinced that I cannot make every decision at Carl's. And it's really finding those employees one by one who really have the same philosophy I do. I love sailing. That's one of my hobbies that I do. And I love trimming my sails to whatever the wind is. And they say there's three types of wind. There's too much wind, too little wind, and just the right amount of wind in the wrong direction. So you're always trying to adjust to something. But what I really love about sailing is when I go on a really long trip, and I love the whole provisioning aspect of loading up my boat and taking the dock cart down and filling it with food and clothes and sleeping bags and just that provisioning. So for me, the really exciting part of Carl's and of our whole team is when we can provision builders, whether it's a homeowner builder, which we have lots of those, probably a third of our market are owner builders, or if we're provisioning that professional builder, the contractor, with all that they need to make a framed package to seal it in with siding, with windows, with doors, frame it with quality materials. I love that part of it. So what I do is to recruit a team who has that same passion for provisioning, for servicing the customer, for a desire for quality, and then really matching a person's skill set with what he wants to do. One of the questions they ask when you interview somebody is, what do you want to do? What do you really enjoy doing? And do you want to do it? That's really the two questions I have for somebody. We have people there who are so gifted at acknowledging and knowing by name every person who walks in. We all marvel at one of my employees who, how can he remember every single name of every person who walks in? But that's just where he's really gifted. So we're going to put him where he is so well suited because he does such a good job. We have others who are so good at the selling part or telling someone how to build. So that's where we put him. He loves building and he wants to educate and tell people how to build. So I really push those skill sets down to where those people thrive and where they have a passion for it and where they excel, because it shows it. It's very apparent when you talk to those people that they really enjoy and love what they're doing.
How many employees do you have now?
32, and in about 2 weeks, I have 33.
Mm-hmm. And have many of them been with you for a number of years?
Yeah. My lead contractor salesperson, Terry, has been with me for, I think, 23 years, and I've got 20-year-old employees, lots of employees in their teens, you know, 12, 13, 14 years.
Now, I've heard it said that Carl's is an employer that really offers good benefits and a nice, stable work environment, very supportive. Now, I know you don't want to toot your own horn, but I just pass that compliment along to you.
Yeah, well, thank you, yeah. I want to be competitive, of course, with what they can get out in the marketplace, but it's also your family. You spend lots of hours or months and even years with them. So whether it's good medical or good time off, PTO, pay time off days, 401ks and profit sharing, salaries that are competitive, yet you work with these guys all day and they have families and you see their kids and they raise their kids and their kids graduate and the kids get married, their kids are having kids. So you watch some of these people for generations, and yeah, there's a real obligation to take care of that Carl's family because they certainly take care of me and my family.
Yeah. Now, do you have weekly or monthly meetings with your team? How does that part of it work?
Yeah, I do. I don't have a meeting with all 33 people, but certainly with my management team.
Right.
There's probably 7 or 8 of us that meet every Thursday. I have a contractor sales lead, my sales manager. I have a CFO. I have my chief operations officer. I have my yard logistics man. We all meet weekly every Thursday to talk about
now
the events of the week.
I want to just digress for a minute because you, like all other business owners, lived through the dark days of what people sort of called the Great Recession. So a lot of people went out of business then. How did you manage to weather the storm?
Well, there's always good builders out there building homes for good customers. So we just kept doing the same thing with those customers during those times. There weren't as many of them, but the ones that were good and were still quality were still building. So we did have sales going on. We never lost money during those years. We didn't make a lot, so we weren't doing the improvements that we like to do and that we have been doing the last 3 or 4 years. But during those times, we kept doing what we had always done because it worked, and we stuck with our team that had been with me for years and just weathered it till it was over. It did seem to last a little bit longer in this community than maybe the rest of Washington, maybe the rest of the country. So it seemed to last longer and go a little bit deeper.
So when do you think the turnaround actually came about here?
Well, I would say 2014 for us. So 14, wow. 15, 16 were the beginning of the turnaround.
The newspapers have recently been full of stories about housing permits going up and lots of construction going on, and just driving around town, I certainly see lots of houses underway. So it must be a pretty good market right now.
It is a good market, yeah.
Earlier in the show, we were sort of talking about the Johnson family and the four generations here. You have three children, as you mentioned earlier. Are any of them going into your line of work?
Well, not currently, but they are all very capable and very smart. And either of my two sons or my daughter could all do what I do very easily. My oldest son is a CPA, works at Amazon, been there for 11 years. My second son, Joshua, is a pilot in the Air Force, and he could do it also. And my daughter works at the Gates Foundation, and she'll be working on her master's coming up.
You sound like you have three talented offspring there.
Yeah. And I have a wonderful wife who supports me every step of the way.
That's excellent. And it's an extended clan, right?
It is.
Do your various cousins or siblings or whatever still own any of the businesses around Marrowstone or the region?
My younger brother, Jake, owns and operates the clam and oyster business. And he also has the trucking, but he's added the excavation portion to it. And then I have an older brother who is still involved in the seafood in a catering capacity, and he does that over in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. And is the Nordland store still in the family?
No. After my grandfather had it, my aunt had it for a while, and then she sold it to a couple outside the family. And they subsequently sold it to Tom and Sue Rose, who've had it for quite a few years, and they do a phenomenal job with the store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard good things about that store.
It's a destination.
Yeah, a destination all on its own.
Yeah.
And family members, do many of them still live on Marrowstone?
Ironically, a few have just returned. I have a twin sister. She returned a few years before me. Both my brothers live there, and my older sister just moved back about 3 years ago. Mm. So yeah, we're all real close.
A lot of Johnsons around these parts. So what are your plans for the future for Carl's?
Well, my plans are to keep doing what we are doing, which is to always look for ways to improve. We quiz ourselves on that continuously. How can we improve our deliveries? How can we improve our services? Always reaching out for additional markets that we can reach by our trucks. 80% of our sales are delivered, so our trucking and our drivers are a real integral part of our sales team because they are the face of Carl's to these different job sites. So we are always looking for those really quality conscious customers to marry with our high valued materials.
Good. Well, we're running very short on time. I just wanted to ask you a little bit about your time outside of Carl's. You mentioned earlier that you're an avid sailor. Do you go on extensive trips or are they little trips? What do you do?
Yeah, both.
Okay.
Yeah, I go on lots of little trips, and probably the last maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years, I've been able to every other year take about a 30 or 31 day trip on my boat. And those have been mainly circumnavigating Vancouver Island.
Wow. And how large is your boat?
It's a 34-foot boat.
Lovely.
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for being on the show, Lawrence. You've been a great guest. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm the host, Marianne McNellis, and my guest today has been Lawrence Johnson, the owner of Carl's Building Supply. Thank you so much for being on the show. And I'd also like to thank my partner, John McPherson. He's the man in the glass booth, the engineer of Our Town. He's the one who makes me and my guests sound so good, so smooth, when really sometimes we bumble around a bit. I'd also like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and the chairman, Robert Ambrose. Both work long and hard to make KPTZ the best community radio station possible. Meanwhile, all of you out there in radio land, keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.